on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, KPP Financial President, Financial Advisor Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Tuesday edition of InvestTalk, June 23rd. And today I have with me a special guest, Justin Klein.
Special?
Well,
am I that special?
You're special.
In many ways.
Yeah. Special. This is our one-hour forum about your money, everybody. The average person is kind of caught in a crossfire. From one direction, you've got all kinds of information and hype supplied by the media about what to do with your investments. And from another direction, you've got the demands to make important decisions that will have a lasting impact on your finances. And it seems like it's all coming very fast and coming faster and faster and faster and different direction, people telling you to do different things. And you have to come up with your own plan, your own common sense plan of what to do about it. So it's difficult. And that's one of the reasons why we're here on this show. We're here to help you sort out all this complexity. Make the best possible decisions you can. Although investing is our main focus, there are many other aspects of your financial lives that we can talk about. Do you have a trust? Do you need a trust? Do you have a will? Do you have a medical power of attorney for your elder parent? Do you need one? Do you need real estate advice? Do you need to talk about that? I mean, we're not experts on all those fields, but if we don't know about it, we have access to people who do. So we'd like you to use this as a resource, if you could. That's what we think this show is all about, a resource. Coming up this Thursday, speaking about resources, we're going to have a special guest. I've talked about this book, Get What's Yours, about Social Security. We're going to have the author, one of the authors, there's three authors. We're going to have one of the authors on the show this Thursday, June 25th. So bring your questions about Social Security benefits. And what you don't know about Social Security benefits can cost you a lot of money. Trust me in this. I've been reading that book, and I'm shocked at some of the things I've come across. Now, what questions do you have today for us, for Justin and I here? What kind of life insurance is best for you? Best for your age? Best for your circumstances? Are you married, single, kids, mortgage? What kind of life insurance do you have with all those things in mind? Do you know? Give us a question. We want to ask the questions here. If you have any other money questions coming to your mind, we're live 4 to 5 Pacific time right now. Our number is 888-99-CHART. So let's take this question from our 24-hour listener line.
I would like to know if the interest rate that happens, the interest rate increase, the yield on the bonds that happens when the value of them falls, is also good for the banks. I know that the interest rate increase that the Fed puts out is good for the banks, but I don't know if when the value of the bonds fall and the yield goes up, if that's also good for the banks. Thank you.
Well, the answer is yes and no. Depends on what side of the ledger you want to talk about. It's good for them because they get to raise their prices when they loan out money.
Yeah, and I think if the increase in interest rates isn't quick and dramatic, meaning the drop in bond holdings isn't quick and dramatic, then it's not really a big deal because they have the capital cushion and they usually hold their bonds to maturity. So that short-term fluctuation in price isn't really bothering them too much, especially because, like you said, they can lend now at higher rates.
Yeah, so the bonds that they're holding on to, as Justin just said, they hold them to maturity. So even if the rates go up and the bond values go down in their portfolio, they don't really care. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're going to hold those till the maturity anyway.
As long as, you know, there's not a sudden increase in interest rates, which causes increase in defaults from companies and consumers, that's when it can get to the point where, yeah, higher interest rates is an issue. But, you know, like I said, a modest increase in interest rates is usually helpful and doesn't cause too many defaults to where, you know, it's negative for the banks.
So just because you don't, we're going to talk about one of the topics we're going to talk about today. Thank you for the question, by the way. One of the topics we want to discuss today is about commissions. And just because you didn't see a commission doesn't mean you didn't pay one when you're buying and selling financial equities. Mm-hmm.
And then how do you know when you see the commission if you're paying too much of a commission? And a lot of it just depends on how much you're trading, what your account size is.
So we're going to talk about broker commissions and understanding the costs of buying and selling. And why a bad durable goods order that came out today is good news. How can a bad durable goods order be good news? We're going to talk about that. And contractor issues. Have you ever hired a contractor and you've had problems with them? I have one right now that I'm having a problem with. So I want to talk about some of the things you got to watch out for if you're going to have a contractor do work for you. And retirement problems and what to do about them. Some of the problems, a couple of problems you may have about retirement, and how do you solve it or fix it or reduce that problem so it won't affect your retirement. And some of these are pretty tough, pretty hard to deal with. So those things we're going to talk about today. I don't really want to talk about Greece, but we can if someone asks about it. I mean, we talked about Greece way too much, and who cares? I read this morning that Greece is 3% of the EU economy.
Yeah. Well, the whole question is what's the contagion going to be, if there is a contagion? They said, a lot of times they said it, there's some people when Lehman went bankrupt that there wouldn't be any contagion, it wouldn't be a big deal. So that's the question: is it really a big deal? I think it won't be like Lehman, but it could be a bigger fallout than the market expects.
Now, those are going to be our talking points, everybody. What's on your mind? What do you want to discuss? Today, the market was actually up. Ended up the day. The Dow was up 25, the NASDAQ up 6, and the S&P up 1.
Yeah, it was really a very modest up day. Most of the day, the S&P was down. The Dow fluctuated as well. And I think really you saw a rally yesterday.
Yes.
Right on the back of hopes out of Greece.
Issue.
Yeah, and I think now it's pause. It's pause to see. Yes, they've made a lot of progress, but actually, what I heard there, because they've dragged their feet for so long, they haven't made really any progress for the last 2 months up until like this weekend.
And they got a payment, don't they? Got a payment tomorrow, next day,
by the end of the month. And so there's still a lot of issues to be hashed out. They made some progress, but not only do they have to come to a final agreement, but then all has to go back to all the parliaments, the Greek parliament, German parliament, and all the parliaments of Europe. To get approved, and will the Greece political system is not one-sided by any means. There's a lot of different factions, so it'll be interesting to see if their parliament agrees with all of the concessions, because Greece has started to make some concessions. That's why they've come together a little bit more.
Yeah, again, it's more drama.
More drama.
Still dragging out. They're going to drag everything out to the last minute.
Yeah, I think they'll eventually get something, though, but I think it'll be messier than most people expect.
Yeah, it'll be a mess.
Meaning there might be some short-term defaults or, to the IMF and those big creditors. Not necessarily a real default to, bondholders, but some of their creditors like the ECB and the IMF.
Yeah, but most of the holders now are either the IMF or the ECB.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so it's not even in the private sector. Most of the bonds, Greek bonds, aren't. So. Mm-hmm. That's what we're going to talk about. Anything you want to talk about, please bring it to our attention. 888-99-CHARTER is our number, 888-992-4278. So let's talk about, let's go ahead and go to the main talking point we're going to discuss. I already did all that. We have some new check updates, by the way, for July. I will be in San Diego County on July 8th and San Jose on July 15th. July 15th, everybody. So I'm setting up the times now. My schedule fills up pretty fast.
How many people did you meet with? 14?
14 last time in 2 days. So, I'm trying to make go up a little bit sooner this time so that those people who wanted to meet with me can. So please sign up if you want to meet with me. Just go to investtalk.com and click on make an appointment. Then we will be in touch with you to set up a time. And we're open right now for your questions, 888-99-CHART. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. We're going to go talk to George in San Jose. He wants to talk about Alibaba Group. How are you doing, George?
Good afternoon, Steve. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
Steve, Alibaba, before Q1 announcement, market was saying the earning is bad, margin is bad. They took it down to 77. After the earnings, few weeks after, they shoot it up to 94. Now, everyday guys are going down. What is really going on with Alibaba, and what price is a good entry?
Well, Alibaba, for everybody else, is out of Hong Kong. It's a Hong Kong-based provider of online and mobile retail marketing places via Taobao. Is that how you say it? Taobao.com, Taomall.com, and other sites. And it IPO'd, I guess that was, what was that day? September 19th this year. September 19th last year. And it came out, the IPO price was $68, but the first trade was near 100. So, you know, there's nothing wrong with it, George. It's still growing very fast. Earnings and sales are still growing very fast. The only thing you probably could say what's wrong with it is it's a little pricey, a little expensive. And, you know, people are, maybe they're seeing that it's expensive and trying to price it more in realm of reality.
Yeah. I mean, its operating earnings yield is less than 2%. So, you know, its primary business is not producing nearly enough earnings and revenue for the value you're paying for this company. You know, to me, this company has to be cut price in half for it to be at least for it to be a decent value. You know, and this is typical with IPOs. You know, it's an overhyped IPO. It's certainly a good company and it's certainly growing, but you know, it's not producing the type of earnings that are needed to make this company a worthwhile investment. So that's what worries me. That's why I wouldn't be invested in Baba. Yeah,
all high growth IPOs, you know, really hyped up tech companies, all of them have this problem. They're very excitable, very exciting, very high growth.
The story's great.
Yeah, and then, you know, a little bit of bad news, and they're very volatile, George. So that's just what you're dealing with. You're dealing with a lot of volatility. Still a great company. There's nothing wrong with it. But it's just very volatile.
Yeah, and they're dealing with issues with a lot of the things on their site, their eBay-like site, are counterfeit, and so they're trying to get those off. And so it's certainly a company that is priced for perfection, and the odds of it reaching that perfection type of level are pretty low. So I would not be investing in Baba.
Thanks for the call, George. Appreciate it. Okay, how about broker commissions? Understand the cost and hidden fees. You know, on a discount broker, your broker commission is probably $10 or less, yep. Okay? Mm-hmm. For a full-service broker, it's much higher. And, you know, when people say, well, I can buy my mutual funds with no cost or, you know, that doesn't cost anything, that's wrong. And did you know when you buy an ETF that you not only have to pay the commission to buy the ETF, but also there's a cost involved inside the ETF, an annual fee that
the expense
they charge?
Ratio,
the expense
yeah.
ratio?
And even a lot of mutual funds, you know, you don't, may not see a commission, but there's what is called a 12b1 fee. So if you buy a mutual fund, whoever sold it to you, they'll get the 12b1 fee on the back end, meaning they'll get 25 basis points, maybe 0.25% per year or
that's
so.
That's beside the expense ratio.
And that's in addition to the expense ratio. So that adds to the fee that you don't really see because that's taken on a daily basis. A lot of people don't really understand that.
It might be a penny.
Yeah.
Or half a penny. Or quarter penny, but it's every day.
Yeah.
So don't think that there's all kinds of ways to, that
then there's loads, right? That you can be charged upfront loads, back end loads. So be aware when you're whenever you're making a transaction, understand what costs go along with that.
Invited to use our listener line right now. Let's talk about money issues. That's what we like to do here. Anything that might be puzzling you, and we'll try to help you. Justin and I are here, Justin Klein, Steve Peasley. Our number is 888-99-CHART. You can call right now.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. Alternative investment strategies, such as managed futures, are gaining in popularity because they offer increased diversification benefits. Balancing a portfolio with alternative investments, that's our talking point for Wednesday's podcast. We hope you'll join us then.
Yeah, I'm a little concerned because it's been written about, talked about, you know, for so much now that maybe it's a bit too late.
Yeah, and if you were tuned into our webinar that we did on foreign investing, was that last month?
Yes.
Maybe earlier this month, and we looked at the relative valuations of a lot of different areas throughout the world. And while Europe is a little bit more attractive from a valuation standpoint than here in America, it really isn't the best spot for foreign investing. So, you know, what you're talking about a lot is appreciation of currencies, which, you know, the euro might continue to appreciate and the dollar might continue to depreciate. That's certainly possible. And if that's the case, then European stocks will probably outperform U.S. stocks. But it wouldn't be my primary place to go and invest in foreign markets. It wouldn't be Europe. It would probably be Asia.
Only because, BJ, as you pointed out, you know, everybody's been talking about it so long, and they came out with their QE months ago, and everybody knew that that should boost their economy, so money poured in there. I'm just thinking now it might be a bit late. I'm not saying it's going to collapse or anything. I'm just saying it might not be the opportunity you're thinking about.
Yeah. Do you have any money in any European stocks, BJ?
Yeah. I invested some time back, and okay. I think it has appreciated nicely. I'm just wondering, is this the time to diverge it to lock in the profits? And basically, because once the news is out, generally it's too late to move on.
You're right. Yeah.
I think everybody by now knows.
Yep. Yeah, I wouldn't. Right. I don't have. I like some exposure to European stocks, but I wouldn't have a super strong conviction to it. You know, I would look more in the Asian region for better values. And, you know, like I said, not. I wouldn't necessarily say this is time to lock in profits, because really hasn't been a giant rally in European stocks or anything. But it just wouldn't be my number one place to deploy capital.
BJ, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Thank you. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So the durable goods report came out today, and that's a report that comes out every month. And remember, we've talked about it numerous times. It's the durable goods are those things that last more than 3 years. So they're considered, you know, the bigger ticket items. Okay, and it came in, and for last month, it fell 1.8%. It was expected to fall 1.5%, and the month before, it fell 1.5%. So that's not very good news. Fell 1.8%. However, when you're looking at the durable goods report, you always look at airplanes, aircraft, because they're so volatile every month. If you take out the aircraft, durable goods actually was up 0.4%. Aircraft orders fell 35% for commercial aircraft. Mm-hmm. If you take out all transportation, which includes automobiles, and why would you do that, airplanes and transportation? Because what you're trying to do is look at the underlying economic strength. And those items are very, very expensive. Okay, so you're trying to figure out, well, what's the underlying strength of the economy? If you take out both airplanes, all transportation, you're up 0.5%. So, okay, those are not huge numbers. I'm not talking about huge numbers. What we're talking about is much better than the top line number, which said shrunk 1.8%.
Yeah.
So the underlying strength is okay. Not great. Not bad.
And I think we should remind remember, what is a durable good?
Those things that last longer than 3 years.
Yeah, anything lasts longer than 3 years.
That's
so,
what I said.
Oh, you said that. Okay, I didn't think so.
That's how I started off the conversation. You're not listening to me.
So, yeah, I mean, I think it's an important measurement to consider. But the, like you said, the transportation number is very volatile. And it can change a lot from month to month. So trying to strip that out, I think is important, and it shows that the economy is doing okay.
It's doing okay. And now, all the recent economic numbers have telling us the economy is doing okay. The one spot that's a little bit brighter in the last few weeks, a month or two, is housing. Mm-hmm. That spot is a bit brighter than the rest of the economy.
It'll be interesting to see if, you know, now that interest rates are rising, you have mortgage rates solidly above that 4% mark for a little while, mm-hmm. to see, you know, if there's some lagging effect.
There is.
To that.
I can tell you right now there is, because I had a Father's Day little celebration at the house over this weekend.
And you have a lot of people in your family that are in the real estate
appraisers. Yeah. Real estate appraisers. And I asked every one of them. There's like four of them. Mm-hmm. I said, well, how's business? He says, well, it's, you know, interest rates went up. It's slowed down in last couple 3 weeks.
Well, there are a lot to do with, you know, refinancing. I would be interested to talk to actual agents that are selling homes, because remember, you know, that's the most important thing. You know, the appraisers, they they like the refinancing boom because you need to have an appraisal for a refinance.
Yeah, but they haven't been doing a lot of refinancing.
They haven't?
Everybody's okay. already done that. So all these are, most of the things they get now are new sales, about 80% of their business.
Gotcha.
I asked that question.
Gotcha. Okay.
So it's not, I think you're going to see a little. Yeah. little.
And I think here in Southern California, interest rates affect things a lot more from what I've been reading.
You're listening to Best Talk. I'm Steve Pizza with Justin Klein. 888-99-CHARTER is our number. 888-992-4278. We're going to go talk to Walter in Sunnyvale, and he wants to talk about Micron Technology. How you doing, Walter?
Good. How are you?
Good, thanks.
So I was just calling about Micron because there's a lot of analysts going back and forth. Some predicting that it's going to be in the 30s. The other ones are saying that it's going to be in the 20s. And it seems like it's a gamble, and everyone's waiting for the earnings call.
Are you an owner of it? Do you want to buy it? Or?
I've been watching it for a couple of weeks.
Okay. Okay, Micron Technology, everybody. They're out of Boise, Idaho, believe it or not. Manufactures RAM, flash memory, image sensors, you know, computer servers.
It's a semiconductor company.
Yeah. So they're going to make $3 a share this year after making $3.13 last year, and they're going to make $3.44 next year. Sales quarter over quarter have been falling. So the stock has been recently hitting some skids. Mm-hmm. You know, last year, I mean, from 2013 to the beginning of this year, this thing did nothing but go up.
Yeah, it's had a great run. It went from 2012, it was around $5 a share, all the way to a high of 35 and change. And now we're at 24 and change, so it's had quite the pullback. And the big reason is because the growth has slowed down dramatically. A year ago, revenues were up 120% back in November quarter of 2013. Earnings were up almost 400%. Now, last quarter, revenue was only up 1%, and earnings were up 5%, or down 5%, excuse me.
So it just got a little ahead of itself, but mm-hmm. what is it really worth? Let's say it recovers and gets to 10% earnings, okay? 10% growth in sales, and that their earnings are going to come at $3.44. Well, a $24 stock, that makes that stock fairly cheap.
Mm-hmm. The biggest issue with this company is that earnings are notoriously volatile.
Yeah.
Extremely volatile. 2008, 2009, they lost a bunch of money. Then they started to make money in 2010, and then from there went down to a loss of $1.10 in 2012, and they've been working their way back up ever since. So
Walter, those analysts that some think it's going to go higher and some think it's going to go lower because no one knows where it's going to go, and they're both right. It could go higher, it could go lower.
Yeah.
You don't know.
This is extremely volatile. I don't like the technicals that it broke the 100-week moving average. I think this is probably going to continue to go lower. I would look for a price in the mid-teens. That's where I would want to pick it up. I don't think, you know, this is certainly some support right here. And sure, and earnings could come out and it could surprise the upside and rally quickly and dramatically. But I would be more comfortable picking this up in the mid-teens.
Yeah, so wait for a pullback, Walter, if you're thinking about buying it.
A bigger pullback.
Yeah, wait for a pullback in the whole market because that'll pull it down further.
Exactly.
And that might be a better opportunity for you. Okay?
Okay.
Thanks, Walter. I appreciate the call. Of course, the market will pull back eventually, people. I know you don't think so, but it certainly hasn't gone up. I will say this. There are corrections in our marketplace which are indicated of a long-term flatline, which is pretty much what we're involved with now since the beginning of the year. If it continues to do this flatlining that it is now, that could suffice as a correction as earnings try to catch up with the price.
Consolidation.
Yeah, we call it consolidation. Yeah. So just interesting that how it's going. Contractors, you ever hire a contractor? You ever had a problem with them? Well, that you do. There's lots of problems with them. And, you know, there's really great contractors out there, too. I've had those as well. But here's a few things that maybe you ought to watch out for. One is to make sure they're licensed. If they're going to do work on your house, make sure you have license. Because if they don't have license, you're going to have virtually no recourse if they screw up. So you got to make sure they have license.
And insured. Right.
Insurance is very important, but that was one of my other.
Oh, gotcha.
That was number eight. and remember that the contract you sign with a contractor, that's always going to favor the contractor, not you. They have those pre-printed contracts. You don't think that's always going to be to their favor. So you need to really understand what's in there. And one many times contractors hire subcontractors. Did you know if they didn't pay their subcontractors that you who hired the contractor are on the hook for the subcontractors?
Interesting.
Even though you may have paid the general contractor all the money it was owed, but he didn't pay the subcontractor, you're still on the hook. And you get a lien on your property. You didn't know that? Contractors also have high turnovers. People that work for them today don't work for them tomorrow. Therefore, you know, you really got to watch their work. That, you know, the contractor is very important. He's supposed to watch their work, but he might be on another job and letting his workers work at your house or wherever it is you hired him. That, you know, they, some of them may not know what they're doing.
Yeah, we're actually setting up a 401k for a construction company, and I actually looked at their list of employees, and in the census, they of the, you know, because when you talk to a company about their 401k, they give you a census of all current and former employees. Their former employees far outweigh their current employees.
Yeah.
Just because there's, like you said, so much turnover. Yeah.
And watch out for low bids. You know, people think they're going to get bids and they'll take the lowest bid. That's not a good thing. A lot of times those lowest bids, especially if it's dramatically lower, that means you're going to get really bad service. And they can cut corners and you wouldn't even know it. And they will, because they have to make a profit. And of course, watch out for padding of the bill. Make sure you pay for what you contracted for. You know, a good contractor.
Do they ever add stuff at the end?
Oh, yeah. They pad it. Yeah. A good contractor, he'll give you a fair bid. And then when he comes across something that was unexpected, he will bring it to your attention and tell you it's going to cost more. And when you get a contractor who doesn't do that, that's a problem. Because that means he's going to hide it. He's going to, you know, something bad in your walls he came across, he's just going to cover it up. I didn't see it. I don't want to confront the homeowner or somebody else, whoever hired me, with this additional problem that I didn't take in consideration in my bid. Well, he shouldn't if it's hidden. Yes. So don't think just because, oh, he's ripping me off because they found something in the wall. Maybe he's not ripping you off.
Go in with your eyes wide open. Yeah, so when in the contract, you have to spell out exactly what it covers, everything.
Yeah.
You know?
What is it covering? And if something comes, and a good contractor will say, and there may be something unforeseen as we pull the wall open or we do this or that, and we'll, you know.
But you have to make sure that you, all the stuff that's covered is everything you're going to need, because they could hide some stuff, like you said, lowball the offer and know that, oh, well, they're going to have to do X, Y, and Z, and it's not covered, and then we're going to push up the price,
right?
You know, so when you're comparing bids, make sure it's apples to apples.
Yeah, be very careful, everybody. Just be aware. You know, that's really all this is about. Let's go to Don in Pleasant Hill. He wants to talk about ETF and interest rates. How are you doing, Don?
Well, exceptionally well, and I'll get better. Good. A simple question for you, hopefully.
Sure.
Looking at ETFs and understand the expense ratios, of course, but it also mentions the annual returns. Is that something that we should be concerned about?
Their annual, what did you call it?
Annual returns?
The annual return?
Not returns. Annual turnover.
Oh, annual turnover. The turnover ratio.
Mm-hmm. And this is for ETFs,
okay,
which surprises me.
Yeah. Well, sometimes, remember, ETFs, a lot of times, some of them are active now. There's actively managed.
But most are
ETFs.
Static.
Most are pretty static. But if they usually follow an index. So if the index has to changes, the ETF has to change as well, and they'll have to make some trades. So the annual turnover, what that means is how much of the total value of the ETF, the amount of money in there, are they actually trading on a yearly basis? And the more they trade, the more trading costs are inherent within that particular ETF, and this happens with mutual funds as well. So it's something you should pay attention to, but usually for, you know, index ETFs, it's pretty low.
Yeah, Donna, it's not a major problem yet, because most indexes so far have been tracking either an industry or sector or an index. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's not much turnover.
I was looking at the various XL stuff. The XLE is one I actually wrote down. And it was talking about an expense ratio of 0.15, but the turnover is 5.25%, and that seems awfully high for an index.
Well, it's tracking the S&P Energy Select Sector Index, so whatever they're doing, they gotta do it.
Yeah. So if they take out a particular, so basically what that means is the index has taken out 5%. of the total value, or turned over 5% of the total value of the total holdings within that particular index. So like I said, when the spiders or this S&P energy, S&P changes the companies that are in the energy select sector index, well then the spiders, you know, managers have to go and make those changes. So, you know, 5% is not very high. You know, they're making big trades in this case, and so the cost to trade that is pretty low. So I wouldn't be too worried about that.
So Don, that's a good example of how indexes change. They're not stagnant. They are dynamic.
Yeah.
They don't change a lot, they can change.
And don't think you're getting charged 5% or anything like that.
No.
That's just the value of what they're trading within that ETF. So don't think that's...
That was really where the question was coming from.
Yeah.
Understanding the expense ratio.
Yeah, that's not in addition to the expense ratio.
No, it's just
ratio.
The turnover. How many... I bought this stock and sold that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all that is.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks for the call, Don. Appreciate it. Thank you. Time for InvestTalk 101, everybody. How an economy grows and why it crashes. It's the title of a book in our selected books section on InvestTalk.com. It's kind of a fun book to read. Justin and I are always telling you that you need to know something. You need to have some basic understanding of economics and how the financial market works. And this book starts very, very simple and gets a little bit more complex as it goes along. But in essence, it's still a very simple book. And it has nice illustrations and some humor, some stories. It's really interesting. I think it's written by Peter Schiff, best-selling author. I think it would be a very good book for you to have. How an Economy Grows and Why It Crashes. It tackles the latest economic issues with some humor. He explains roots of economic growth, uses of capital, the destructive nature of consumer credit, the source of inflation, the importance of trade and savings, risk. It's really good. So I would strongly recommend that you take a look at that.
And that's a great example of a book that will help people get the proper perspective and look at things from a 10,000-foot view. And, you know, so many people get caught up in the media hype and the story about a particular company or a particular sector. To understand the market as a whole and the economy as a whole, you really have to understand it from a big picture perspective. And what are the big main factors that are overarching in the economy that affect all sectors, not just one sector or one company at a time?
And that's InvestTalk 101. Do you have questions? We're here right now, 888-99-CHART. Or you can write me or Justin a note. Just click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin on InvestTalk.com.
Coming up Thursday on Invest Talk, he wrote the book on Social Security benefits. Get What's Yours, the secrets to maxing out your Social Security.
I got a friend $120,000 in widower benefits that he knew nothing about. I got another friend about $20,000 in child benefits he knew nothing about.
His name is Lawrence Kotakoff, and he knows how to help people get what's theirs. Hear his secrets and ask him questions this Thursday. Get What's Yours, the secrets to maxing out your Social Security, right here on InvestTalk.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Retirement problems and what you can do about it. One of the biggest problems that many people have, not the majority of people or anything like that, there's a small fraction, but people are forced or unexpected retirement, forced into early retirement or unexpected retirement, not ready for it because they're being forced to it. What can you do about that? Well, first thing you have to do is you got to really take a hard look at your income and your outgo at that point. Okay? In other words, you have to figure out what are things are necessary and things that are not necessary, that are a luxury for you. And you have to say, I have to take a hard look at that and get real. Many people don't do that. They spend just as much as they always spend because they still have it in the bank and they think everything's going to be hunky-dory. That doesn't work that way. Also, you're going to have to take a lousy job or a part-time job. You may have to do that. That's just reality. So if you are forced to retire early, you may have to take a lesser job. Simple as that. And don't get all panicky about it. That's just what you have to do.
And a lot of times retirees are getting part-time jobs within their own industry still. Yep. You know, whether they're an engineer or an accountant or whatever they were, there's probably a company out there that needs your type of expertise. Maybe not in the same capacity that you were in before, but maybe in a more limited role, and that can supplement, you know, the pension that you're getting, Social Security, etc., that will sustain you for more years in retirement, to the point where, you know, maybe you can't work anymore, as opposed to, like you said, being forced out.
Another problem that could come up: badly timed stock market drop. You could be retiring now, and 6 months from now, the market crashes on you. And they had a lot of investments. Well, the thing to avoid that, it's very simple. If you're retiring so close, reduce your risk exposure to the market. Diversify properly, or go to a different asset class, or do something to prevent that from really hurting your retirement nest egg.
Yeah, that's why it's important to understand your risk tolerance and what risk you should be taking, and have a picture of your retirement and know how to invest accordingly.
And try not to panic out. You know, many people panicked out the last big drop right at the bottom. Try not to do that. Those are a couple things that you got to watch out for. Now it's time to get your question in before we're done for the day. 888-99-CHART is how to reach us. You can do it anytime you want. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, but we're live until 5 o'clock. We got our last segment coming up. Join us. Join the conversation on Invest Talk.
Our podcast distribution is made possible each day by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. Did you know you can access a link to a related article associated with each day's main talking point? Also, you can click to back listings for the last 10 Invest Talks, each listing the topics and the stocks discussed. Just go to investtalk.com.
888-99-CHART. Don't save your questions. If you have a question that is about the basics or something a little bit more advanced, we're here for you, whether you're an experienced investor or just a beginner. 888-99-CHART.
Hello, Steve and Justin. My name is Israel, and I'm calling from Israel. I want to buy AVGO, Avago Technologies Limited. It has good fundamentals and technical as well. Forward PE 15, return of investment 19, no high debt. Please, I would like to have you take on AVGO. Thank you, and have a great day. Bye-bye.
Well, just taking a quick look at it, Avago Technologies out of Singapore, a Singaporean designer of analog ICSs for telecom and industrial and automotive and computer markets. It's going to make $8.68 this year. That's up 77% from last year. Kind of makes me think that maybe they bought something to get that huge earnings growth. And $9.32 next year, up another 7%. Sales growth has been pretty spectacular. 130% last quarter, 131% the quarter before, 115% the quarter that, 97% the quarter before that. And it's a, what, $141 stock at $9.32. It's what, it's going to be about a
15 PE.
15 PE next year? That's not too bad.
Yeah, that's relatively cheap.
Return on equity is 44%.
Yeah, and good. The fundamentals are pretty good. The operating earnings looks a little weak to me, 2.5%.
Take a look at debt. Might be a debt problem.
They do have a good amount of debt on their balance sheet. Let's see.
So whenever you look at operating profits are not that great, that immediately tells me, well, let's look at debt. Maybe their overhead's a little expensive, and first place I would look is always at the debt. But they still look pretty good. The stock chart looks pretty stellar as well.
It's moving up well, and the technicals are good. Their financial leverage, they had to purchase somebody, because their financial leverage went from 1.18 to 3.24. Yeah.
And that
overnight.
Would make sense, see, on the earnings
last year. So I'm sure they bought somebody, and that sparked their growth. And they've been paying that down, that debt, with that cash flow. So that's good. I like that. So overall, I kind of like it. I like good value, the momentum strong, but it certainly is a high-risk name with such large growth due to acquisition. That's certainly going to slow down, and are people going to realize, or investors going to realize, that it has been sparked by this acquisition and get used to more normal growth rates.
It's a big company, almost $37 billion company. Yeah. It's not small.
And good cash flow. But my biggest issue, too, is it's in semiconductors. That's
good question.
It's very volatile.
Let's take an... Oh, are we done with that caller? Or is that... Okay, let's go ahead and take another one. We have a time. No matter when you call, we'll be happy to answer the question. 888-99-CHART.
Hi, I had a question regarding zero coupon bonds and how they fit into a long-term investment strategy. I love your show, and thanks for the info.
I wonder how many people out there know what a zero coupon bond is. I bought them in my investment life personally, so I know what they do.
They're pretty self-explanatory. No coupon.
Well, there's no coupons, but I don't think people really even know what a coupon is. You want to know?
Well, coupon is interest payment.
Yeah. Used to have to cut out the coupon on the bottom of your bond, and you turn that in, and that's how you got your interest payment. So that's where the word coupon came from. You actually had to turn in a coupon to get your money. But a zero coupon bond means there's no coupons, meaning that what you do, if you bought a $25,000 10-year zero coupon bond, you buy that bond for maybe $18,000, okay?
And then when it matures, then you get $25,000 back.
That's exactly. Now here's, there's a negative to this, everybody. The negative is every year that bond goes up, the government pretends that you got the money for that, and you have to pay income tax on
it. So if you bought it for $18,000 in a year, it's now worth $19,000. Well, guess what? You pay taxes on $1,000,
and you never got the money.
Yeah.
It doesn't mature for 10 years. Yeah. So you don't got it.
They're not bad investments, that's just something you have to understand. And I would rather go with a traditional bond. I like those coupons. And
well, it all depends on the return rate. They're not that better than the regular bond, so why bother?
Well, a lot of them are very high risk as well.
Yeah. Well, there's treasuries that you have coupons.
That's true.
Time to wrap it up for the day, everybody. A reminder, don't miss our Thursday Invest Talk. The author of Great Get What's Yours is going to be here. That's the Social Security book, and I've been talking about it for several months. So I hope you're here to listen to that. I think you'll get a lot out of it. And make sure you get your questions ready for them, too. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley with Justin Klein today. We're with KPP Financial. We want to thank you for listening and hope you join us again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.